Fembot had put up on the display for us and reading the projections. We're cutting this very close. Everyone is in place, I said, as the final ship connected its light lance. You need to all pull directly up, Fembot explained, together with an equal force. Here, I'm sending instructions to the others as if from you. I nodded and turned the ship upward, pointing the boosters down. My acclivity ring rotated automatically, so it was pointed downward as well. Careful, Fembot told me as I moved into position. Give yourself as much slack as possible at first, and don't hit the booster too hard. You'll risk pushing down on the fragment with your thrust, negating some of the value of your pull. I gripped the thrust, refusing to give in to my instincts, which urged me to throw on the overburn. Instead, I slowly ramped up the booster to the threshold Fembot indicated. It felt like I wasn't making any progress at all, as if nothing were changing. All through it, Fembot's voice continued calmly. Ease off a little. That's it. He sent similar instructions to the other pilots' displays. I glanced at the monitor, watching as we got closer and closer and closer to the broadsider base, until we barely crested over the top, with enough clearance to avoid hitting the base structures. We knocked off the tops of a few trees, though. I let out a long breath while Fembot sent another order to everyone that we could simultaneously power down and then cut our light lances. I complied, then slowed in the air, letting that bullet fragment zip away. Without our influence, it lowered back down. Then, a few minutes later, it collided with the next fragment it encountered. Both fragments were made up of more rock than the one that had collapsed before, and so they crushed together, stone crumpling and bulging, like the fronts of some of the starfighters I'd seen impact. The sound was incredible. As I hovered in place, Peg slowly drifted up beside me in her shuttle. Never seen anything like that, she said privately over the comm. I'm growing glutens. Though now that we're safe, I'm kind of glad I get to watch it. This feels like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I was sure that for most people, it would be just that. Peg, I said, we need to make our assault on Shorehold sooner than planned. Why? She asked. Sitting here like this is tempting fate. The nowhere is changing in dangerous ways. Plus, I'm getting too complacent. I want to be moving on. All right, all right. Don't toss Tidos at me. Maybe we can move the timeline up. The fragments that had collided shattered into multiple pieces of acclivity stone. The largest portions stayed pushed together, fused in the center, while smaller bits went bouncing free, spraying out like enormous chunks of shrapnel. You know, Peg said absently, it's almost like the nowhere just up and decided to try to kill us. She laughed, though there was an edge to the sound. Let's assault Shorehold tomorrow, I said. Waiting will only give the superiority a chance to notice that we're gathering, preparing something. We're ready. Let's do it. Peg was silent for a time, and I couldn't judge her body language, not in separate ships as we were. I tried to inch mine forward to glance in through the window of her tug. Peg? I asked. All right. We'll need to rush to get all the ships back together and do last-minute preparations. If we can manage that, then yeah, tomorrow. I'll let the other faction leaders know.
Chapter 32. I got up the next morning eager, excited. I'd done a quick check-in with Jorgen to let him know what I'd overheard in regard to the Delvers and Winzik, but I hadn't stayed with him long. I'd known many of our team would be working all night on the ships. The pilots had been ordered to get a good night's sleep, and so I had forced myself to do just that. Indeed, the hangar was already a buzz of activity when I entered. Ground crew members were still dashing this way and that. By the large clock Peg had set up, we had 2 hours until departure, and there still appeared to be a lot to get done. Back home, I'd have left all these sorts of preparations to the professionals. That wasn't how the broadsiders worked, though. Instead, I hurried to Embot's ship, where Naluba was working. She'd serviced the boosters and was just now putting the casing back on one of them. I sprang to help her lift the casing into place, and it occurred to me that this was a chance to do something I'd been meaning to for a while. "Naluba," I said, "I want to apologize to you." "Apologize, Spin," she said, gesturing with one arm in a wide loop, something I thought was to express comfort. "You have made up for your theft of the ship." "It's not about that," I said. "It's about how I might have treated you, particularly when I was first here. I worry I was kind of abrasive to you."
"Ah,"
Naluba said, using a drill to lock the bolts as I held the casing in place.
"Yes, I did notice that. I assumed it was your natural human aggression."
"It was more than that," I said.
"You heard about my past?" "A freedom fighter," she said, "from a human enclave."
"Yes," I said. "Most of our jailers were Varvax, though we called them the Krell. And, well, I've never really gotten over that. Despite the fact that you've always been nice to me, I think I might have taken it out on you."
"My, my," she said, and I winced, thinking even now of Winzik. "That is very mature of you, Spin. Very mature and very wise. I cannot say I was so quick to reject my biases when I first met Maxime."
"Really? You did it too?"
"Oh, yes," she said, as we stepped away from the now completed booster. "It is unfortunate, and I am embarrassed. I commend you for giving me a chance, Spin. If I had been imprisoned by humans for many years, I do not know that I would be so willing to accept one of them into my company."
I smiled, and she waved her hands in response. How could I have ever hated this thoughtful creature? She was so calm, so relaxed. In a way, Naluba represented something I'd never actually known. A person at peace with themselves and their place in the universe. Or, well, the non-universe.
"You are ready to go," she said, patting the booster. "Fully tuned. It was a pleasure."
I looked at the ship, with its sleek shape and powerful boosters, and my excitement stoked further. "You're always so serene with this work," I said to Naluba, "whether it's doing maintenance or taking inventory. Wouldn't you like to fly one of these?"
"Please, no,"
Naluba said, gesturing with her fingers, making a light rolling motion. A Varvax laugh.
"I like things simple."
"Piloting can be simple."
"No, pilots are too important," she explained. "I like being ignored. That's why I picked the job I did in the somewhere. I prefer to just sit in the corner and putter. It was distressing that I caused so much of a fuss with my discoveries."
She hesitated, then grew more solemn.
"Not that I'd go back. I hate the lies we've told."
There was a heroism in those words, a type I'd never acknowledged. To me, being a hero had always been about fighting. But Naluba reminded me of Kuna, the quiet diplomat who had done so much to resist Winzik.
"Before you suit up," Naluba said, pointing, "I believe Shiver wanted to speak to you."
We still had a good amount of time until takeoff, so I dodged around Maxime as he jogged past with a spare power matrix, then entered the resonance corner of the room. Here, I always felt as if I were stepping up to a large geode. They'd leaked lines of crystal, like veins in stone, out from their ships, then over to this section. When I'd asked Shiver why, she'd explained that the crystals grew naturally, and so they needed to send them somewhere. Each time they flew away, they broke connections to this place. But so long as they returned soon enough, they could reconnect. If they moved to Shorehold, what would happen? Would this crystal network in the corner eventually crumble to dust? Up close, I could distinguish their crystals from each other. Shiver was slightly more violet, and Liz slightly more pink. They had grown over one another in a way I was led to understand was common among friendly resonants. The two beings chatted softly in their musical language. They did that almost constantly when near each other. "You wanted to talk to me?" I asked Shiver, settling down beside one of her larger crystals.
"Yes, Spin," Shiver responded. "I wish to thank you for making this possible."
"The assault today?"
"Indeed," Shiver said. "Peg has been planning this for years. I vibrate with joy, knowing the plan is finally moving forward. But I also wish to thank you on behalf of Deliz. If we are successful, we will again have access to the icon at Shorehold and the reality ashes. I maintain hope that having more of those over the long term will continue to help her."
"How's she been lately?" I asked, glancing toward the array of crystals.
"It is difficult to cleave that question, Spin," Shiver said. "Sometimes she seems almost ready to speak, at the very edge of layered words, sentences. And then she withdraws to unlayered words, hints at meanings. I've heard true words from her only a handful of times now, including when she spoke to you."
"I don't think I understand. Layered words and unlayered words?"
"I apologize," Shiver said. "Let me reverberate. We can make different crystals vibrate with different tones, and language is always two or more of those together. Deliz makes single tones, more ideas than true words. It is communication, and I can investigate her feelings, comfort her, encourage her. But her responses are rarely true words, more the tones we make while learning. This is our equivalent of what you would call baby talk. Yet Liz is old, older than I am, and she flies a ship just fine."
I nodded, studying the overlapping lattices of blue crystals with pink or violet undertones. I'd seen Shiver help with repairs. A few days back, she'd overgrown part of Peg's shuttle looking for a short. It was incredible the level of detail Shiver could sense with her crystals, though actually doing repairs took her much more time than it took someone motile. She could technically grow as many arms as she needed, but moving things usually involved encasing them in crystal and then growing that crystal to reposition the object. I found it amazing that the resonance had developed space-age industry under those limitations. But I guessed when members of your species commonly lived thousands of years, you had other advantages. And there was something hardcore about an entire civilization made up of singing crystals. Even the wildest of Grand Grand stories couldn't compete with the universe's biodiversity. Admittedly, though, I was still miffed about the whole sandworm thing. "Could reality ashes actually help her?" I asked.
"I hope so," Shiver said. "But it has been some time, much time, since we found her."
"The icon," I said. "At Shorehold, what does it look like?"
"A small child's toy. It is kept on display to help the workers feel comfort. It's beautiful." She paused. "It appeared with Peg when she was thrown in here, but she was prevented from taking it when she rebelled. I think part of her eagerness to capture the base has to do with reclaiming it. Spin, I know that you and Chet have been looking for something among the broadsiders, something that was taken. An icon?"
I didn't respond immediately. She knew?
"You were captured with an unusual amount of reality ashes," Shiver said. "And though Chet has been subtle, I am better than most at subtle interaction. You lost an icon. You think it's stolen?"
"Yes," I admitted. "I buried it outside before sneaking in here the first time. Now it has vanished."
"Then I have, perhaps, news for you. I helped Peg recover her icon several times at Shorehold. Icons are bits of the somewhere and respond in odd ways to being in here. Spin, they sometimes seem to get disjointed from this place, as if out of phase with the movement of fragments.
Which means
they move on their own on occasion. As I said, it feels as if they've gotten out of sync with the regular fragment motions. You find them outside safes or in rooms where you didn't leave them. It is rare, but I've seen it happen. It's possible nobody took your icon, and I think that if one were here, Peg would have sniffed it out and told everyone. She'd insist we share the ashes. It is her way.
That was curious news. I mulled on it a moment and found I was glad. Perhaps I didn't have to worry about a thief here, other than myself, naturally. But what if the icon had fallen into the void, or vanished and appeared on another fragment entirely? In that case, I'd never find it. I'd have to rely on our remaining ashes to get us out of here. That was possible. They should last long enough. But still, I felt a sense of loss. It hadn't really been my father's pin, but it had been important to me nonetheless. As I pondered that, Shiver's mention of Peg brought another question to mind. Does Peg really have a tree?
Yes. So do her sons, whose trees were grown from fruit on hers. The Tenasai symbiosis is a beautiful thing, and I often resonate with it. You should be able to see the tree soon, as it still grows at Shorehold. Those there would never destroy a Tenasai tree, no matter how bad the blood between us and them. Once we arrive, you can see the icon for yourself as well.
I'm looking forward to it, I said. Icons, Shiver. What are they?
I have no idea, Shiver said. This place is strange in a lot of ways, isn't it? But I'll tell you this. Looking at that icon, I always felt as if it had a soul. Like it was a fragment of our world in the same way the Delvers are a fragment of this one.
What an odd way to describe it. I stood up, intending to extricate myself from the conversation with Shiver, who would continue to chat endlessly if you let her. I always felt so awkward excusing myself, but, well, she seemed to think all motile species were a little rude anyway. When you literally couldn't walk away from your neighbors, you learned to be polite.
Before you go, Shiver said, I admit I have a request for you, Spin. Please do not think me forward, but I suspect you intend to leave this place. Not this region, but the nowhere entirely.
I do, I said. People need me in the somewhere.
I've never known anyone to leave without superiority permission, Shiver said, and even those cases are rare. But my request is in regard to Deliz. Peg worries that once someone is that far gone, only getting out can help them. So if you do escape, will you see if you can find a way to open a path for Deliz and me? For her sake?
That helps, I asked. I mean, our memories return if we leave?
I believe so, Shiver said. At least the few people at the base who left and came back in seemed to have recovered some, if not all, of what they lost during their time here.
I'll try, I promised. Chet is going with me, and we'll be able to see firsthand if someone without any memories gets them back once outside.
Thank you. That is all I can ask. Getting out through Shorehold would require negotiations with the Superiority, and I do not trust them. I do not believe it would be safe to leave that way, no matter what they promise. I don't think the other pirates care. They prefer it in here, away from the concerns and problems of the somewhere. I am not the same. And Deliz, she needs help. She wants out. I can feel from her vibrations it is so.
I'll do what I can, I said, then glanced to the side as Peg announced that there was less than an hour left. Time to suit up.
Fight well, Spin, Shiver said, and I shall do the same. Thank you again for your time with us.
I went running to clean up and get on my flight suit. I spent the next 20 minutes doing pre-flight checks and getting a final okay from Naluba and Maxime to go into combat. As I finished, I spotted Chet standing down below, helmet under his arm. He'd taken off his sling last night, and his arm seemed mostly healed.
With your permission, he said,
I should like to fly with you today, Spencer.
It might get a little crazy, I said.
I understand crazy better than you may assume, he replied. And, well, I had Razed take me out last night to run me through G-Force training. I feel like I remember things better from long ago, ways to help my body withstand. Even if not, however, I prefer to join you. To be frank, I'm worried about the Delvers. They failed in their attack yesterday. They will try something else.
I nodded. Let's go, then. Chapter 33. It was a different sort of group that left the Broadsider base that day. For the duel, we'd brought everyone, flying in a leisurely way, a convoy that had been part show of force, part proof of solidarity. Today, we took only the pilots. Peg joined my flight. Loaded with firepower, but slower than the fighters, her shuttle would be a target, but could deal damage almost like a much larger gunship. By her order, we kept off the comms. There was no joking, storytelling, or sitting and idly reading books during this flight. I spent the initial part of the flight, before we met up with the other factions, trying to contain my excitement. Our destructors were still set to non-lethal, but each of our ships had been equipped with the ability to flip them to lethal mode in case this battle turned truly dangerous. Peg didn't want to do that. She wanted to recruit the pilots at Shorehold, not kill them. But she was too pragmatic not to have the option available. I gave Chet the controls and let him acclimatize himself to them. If I were somehow hurt during the fight, he might have to take over, as M-Bot remained unskilled. Chet performed a few simple maneuvers, showing that he did have some muscle memory for piloting, and I sat in thought, troubled by something Shiver had said about icons. I considered that, then closed my eyes, questing out from the cockpit with my senses. I forced myself to be extra quiet and subtle as I searched. I paused as I felt the Delvers, or their attention, nearby, waiting and frightened. They didn't notice me. I could feel their minds pushing out from the light burst in this direction, but they weren't aware of me. I could remain invisible to them with effort, though I suspected this would only work so long as they didn't know exactly where I was. Feeling pleased with my improvement so far, I turned away from them and sensed outward, looking for familiarity. I remembered that when I'd first entered the nowhere in that jungle, I had felt a mind close to mine. Before I'd found Chet, I had sensed something, something I'd thought was my father. Had that been my icon? It felt foolish to think it had actually been him. Yet as I searched, I layered my mind with a warmth. The starness I'd learned on the path. That was like a code or a call sign. I'd used it to batter back Braid's cloud upon me and escape from her prison. But it could also indicate who I was, where I was, though only to those I knew. Like a communication signal on a private comm band. I felt something jump and contact me back. A mind. I brushed against it and my heart leapt. My pin. Yes, I could feel it and it responded. It was angry at me for burying it. That shocked me. The pin's mind felt familiar, loving. It felt like family. Father? I thought. I was returned a warm sensation. I knew it was ridiculous, but, I mean, this place was strange. Where are you? I asked. I was given back a sense of Shorehold? Yes, that was where the icon was. How had it gotten there? I mean, Shiver had warned me they moved, but that far? The mind retreated. I'm coming to you, I sent to the pin, then came out of my cytonic trance, confused. It couldn't truly be my father's soul, could it? And why, how was the pin at Shorehold? The place where I was already going? That seemed extraordinarily coincidental. And that reminded me of Chet's coincidental arrival, which I hadn't thought about in a while. Eventually, Our flight met with the other pirate factions one by one. Peg welcomed each in turn, and I sensed relief in her voice. She'd been worried they wouldn't show. She had us linger after the fourth faction joined, giving one final chance for the cannonators to appear. They didn't.
"All right, people," Peg said over the comm to us all. "We will absolutely win this. We have spent years in combat preparing, while they've been hiding, hoping the superiority would send them more strength. They haven't. The superiority doesn't care about them, or about any of us. They only care about their acclivity stone. So we're going to hit them hard and take it away. Maybe they have other mining stations far across the empty boundaries, but I know they rely on this one more than any other. So we'll lock the portal up tight, and they'll have to play by our terms."
The gathered 80 or so ships gave cheers and raucous calls in a variety of different types of vocalization. Chet and I joined in, hooting and shouting.
"My Jolly Rogers are ready to move to lethal destructors," Grem announced after the noise died down. "Not unless the enemy does first," Peg said. "Remember, these ones we're fighting, they're not really our enemy. They're merely a bunch of frightened sods trapped between two forces. We're going to come in not as raiders, but as liberators. So keep your rounds non-lethal. Call me or one of the tugs if you see a locked-up ship, even an enemy, about to collide with terrain. Stay focused on the fight. And if you face a pilot who's too good, call for help."
She got a round of agreement, and I was impressed. She and her sons had done an excellent job laying the groundwork for this battle.
"Okay," Embot said in our cockpit. "I feel trembly, but somehow still eager to go forward."
"Fear and eagerness," Chet said. "That sounds like enthusiasm."
"No, I think there would be more happy eagerness," Embot said. "This is nauseous eagerness."
"Perhaps exhilaration," Chet said.
"I could go with that," Embot replied. "Exhilaration. Yep, I'm exhilarated."
"What are you two on about?" I asked.
"The AI and I have been bonding,"
Chet said with a proud tone to his voice.
"He's been wanting help defining his specific emotions. I agreed to assist him."
"Now?" I demanded.
"What better time?" Chet asked. "He is likely to be feeling a lot of strong emotions, after all."
"We'll do it quietly," Embot promised.
Great. I didn't believe that for a moment. Still, we continued on, entering superiority territory. It didn't look much different to me, though there were more fragments and they hung closer together. We flew straight toward the center, that enormous glowing white light. It felt as vast and intimidating as it ever had.
"Heads up, broadsiders," Peg said. "They're incoming. Prepare for engagement."
Her ship had a better scanner than mine. It took another 2 minutes for my sensors to see the oncoming ships. Embot counted them as they arrived, eventually settling on 93 ships. Slightly more than our numbers, and I didn't see any retrofitted civilian ships among them. Hopefully Peg was right, and we had the better pilots. Regardless, my excitement built. And the excitement was pure. No tension, no worry. A chance to fly and fight. A huge battle. I was ready.
"That's odd," Shiver said over the comm. "Captain, you see that?"
"Yeah," Peg said. "Everyone, zoom your displays out."
My proximity display expanded, revealing a larger view of the nearby fragments. Two just ahead of us were unnaturally close. They were going to bump. No, collide.
"Captain," Rayzed said, "didn't you say that collisions between fragments were incredibly rare?"
"I did,"
Peg replied.
"Now we're encountering a second one, only a day after the last. Is something wrong?"
"Can't say," Peg told us. "But words. I'm pulling up IDs on some of those enemies.
It appears the Cannonade faction has come to join the party after all.
I frowned until MBOT scans indicated a group of new ships flying in to enter the fight. It was the Cannonade faction. But they didn't join us. Instead, they swooped around and fell in with the superiority.
Wonder how much they were paid to grow those flivvis,
Sem grumbled.
Does Vlip really think the superiority will keep whatever promises they made him?
Doesn't matter, Peg said on the wide comm. Just a few more easy targets and a few traitors to embarrass. Watch the debris from that collision. Stay away from the fragments if you can. I don't see the former champion on the scans, but he might be hiding in there somewhere. Do not engage if you spot him. Leave him to one of our aces.
He'll come for me, Peg, I said on a private line. Hesho will want a rematch.
Bring down as many enemies as you can before it happens, Spin, Peg said. I think we're better than they are, but I wouldn't mind if you evened out our numbers.
Got it, I said as we drew closer. Then the two groups finally broke, starfighters screaming toward one another, meeting right above those colliding fragments. My proximity sensor went ballistic as the landscapes impacted and chunks of rock began to break apart. I grinned and launched into the middle of the chaos. It was so liberating to not have to worry about the safety of my companions. Cobb would have yelled at me for not bringing a wingmate, but here I could fly as I'd always secretly wanted to, reckless, free. I lit up a ship in front of me, neatly blasting away its shield. That sent it into a series of panicked, evasive maneuvers. Trusting my gut, I chased for a moment, then backed off and gave them space to screw up. They did just that, trying so hard to get away from me that they took a shot from Peg. My grin widened as I dove to the side and shot down one, then two, then three enemy ships. Scud, this was awesome. I dove among the crazy mess, blue destructor blasts lighting the sky in all directions. MBOT highlighted some enemies on the monitor. My reckless attacks had earned me two tails.
So, let me see, MBOT said. This emotion is frustration at the crazed attack, mixed with the teensiest amount of fondness, and a desire to bonk her on the head with something that isn't too heavy, but just heavy enough.
Vexation, Chet said.
Wow, MBOT said. That's perfect. Spensa is like vexation incarnate.
I thought you two said you'd be quiet, I said.
You'd rather not be able to hear us talk about you, MBOT asked.
Actually, no. I gritted my teeth in a half-grin, half-grimace, and accelerated, diving to dodge the fire from our tails. At the risk of being called foolhardy, I pushed us low, weaving between parts of the landscape of one crumbling fragment. Chet's face on the corner of my screen looked a little pale.
How you doing back there, Chet? I asked.
Trying my best to enjoy the expert course in being vexed, Miss Nightshade, he called. I recognize this kind of fragment. It is from a twilight planet, those that grow in a dark solar system, feeding off a star that doesn't glow brightly in the visible spectrum, but still provides radiation. Those places tend to have plants and animals with much bioluminescence, and even a kind of mineral luminescence. Judging from what I've seen, these rocks will likely explode in great showers of light if hit by destructor fire. Perhaps you can use that?
Excellent. I spotted a hole in the breaking fragment ahead, and so I pushed for that. I wove up in a loop, then straight through the hole. My tails followed, but as I expertly wove between falling pieces of rock, their destructor shots hit on all sides of me. As Chet had suggested, the explosions lit up like flares. Indeed, the falling debris acted like flak ejection, intercepting the disruptor fire. So long as I didn't hit any big chunks, I'd actually be safer in here. Even as I was thinking that, I did hit one moderately sized chunk, only one, and my shield deflected it.
A sense of disbelief, Embot said, mixed with an absolute expectation that something like this would happen. Because of course, she'd dive through a radioactive, explosive natural minefield.
Resignation, Chet said with a chuckle.
Quiet, you two, I muttered, as I pulled up and darted along underneath the ripping fragment, weaving between chunks of dropping earth. My two tails, blinded by the explosions, evidently lost track of me as they broke off pursuit.
That was well done, Spencer, Chet said.
We're alive, Embot said. And oddly, I feel...
Yeah, I know, I said. Complain about my recklessness again.
Actually, he said, I'm feeling something different. A tremble of excitement, building to relief, and a desire to do the same thing again?
Ha, I said. You thought it was fun.
It was, Embot said. Scud! Why did that feel fun? It was stupidly risky.
A little risk is what makes it enjoyable, AI, Chet said. That is the part that is daring. The part that is exciting, assuming one can fight down the nausea.
I looped around toward the main firefight, where I found Peg's slower ship being tailed by someone fairly skilled. I drilled them with three precise shots in a row, making them break off.
Enjoying danger sounds like an evolutionary problem, Embot said. Shouldn't you find things fun when they're safe?
Who knows, I said. I don't think evolution was trying to create me. I just kind of happened.
Evolution doesn't try to do anything, Embot said. But like it or not, you are the pinnacle of its work. All evolutionary pressures throughout all the ages among your species have resulted in you.
Bet it feels embarrassed, I said, finally shooting the ship that had been chasing Peg. It locked up and slowed, soaring idly through the battlefield.
Like that time all the parents got together to watch their kids march when I was in school, and my mother was forced to admit to the other moms that I was the one who'd glued her homemade suit of wooden power armor to her uniform.
I wish I'd known you back then, Embot said. You sound like such a capricious child.
Yeah, child.
I'd been 16. Where is Hesho? I asked, looking over the battlefield. Any signs of him yet on the scanners?
No, Embot said. But with this much debris flying around, my sight isn't as precise as I'd like. He could be hiding in there somewhere.
Ship coming in from the right, Spencer, Chet warned.
I dodged to the side, but as soon as that pilot realized who I was, they broke off the chase. I light-lanced around a chunk of acclivity stone that was floating upward from the crashing fragments, then fell in behind the fleeing ship. If the pilot was frightened of me, that would work to my advantage. Once, I might not have found this battle enjoyable. I was of a higher skill level than these pilots, and I did love a challenge. As I matured, though, I was beginning to realize that all combat was a challenge. Merely staying alive was challenging in a chaotic mess like this, where ships were darting in every direction, and destructor blasts flew like embers in the forges. I felt alert, engaged. As my prey dodged past some floating rubble, my proximity sensor beeped. A ship had been hiding in there, and it darted out as I passed, falling in behind me. One with a familiar design, small cockpit, large weapons signature. Hesho had set a trap for me.
Well, hello, former champion, Chet said. About time you showed up.
Slight nausea, Embot said. Something I really shouldn't be able to feel, mixed with uncertainty.
That one's apprehension, I said, grinning. Stomp it dead, Embot. This is going to be fun. I broke away from the chase. Hesho followed me, and the ship I'd been tailing immediately swung around and joined him. I'd beaten Hesho in our previous meeting, so while he obviously wanted a rematch, he'd brought a wingmate for support. There was no dishonor in pitting two against one in a battle like this. That was how the game was played. The two flew as if to isolate me from the rest of the battle, herding me outward. If I tried to turn, one or the other moved to cut me off.
I'd been in this situation before several times, fighting the Krell. In fact, I felt like maybe I'd taught Hesho this maneuver, a way to cull a ship from a battle and deal with it. In a big firefight, it was often preferable to have your ships fly defensively while a few kill teams of expert aces shrank the enemy numbers. Well, I needed to make the fight a little less fair, or make it unfair in my direction. I dodged right, risking a hit to my shield, and indeed I took one, to avoid being corralled. In a two-on-one fight, chaos favored me, and so I wanted to be in the thick of the shooting. Embot helpfully popped up a tally of ships still fighting, proving that the pirates were holding their own, even making a little headway into the enemy lead. A building appeared in the air directly in front of me. Scud! I veered to the side, and my shield scraped the edge of the giant floating structure, shattering its windows in my wake as I skimmed one face of it. "What the hell was that?" Chet asked. "I don't." Another building appeared at my side, tall and rectangular. Then something else flashed and materialized directly ahead of me. Was that a swimming pool? I managed to duck around it, but it spun in the air, dumping a wave of water over us. "A sudden spike of fear," Embot said, "and general paralysis. I know this one myself. Panic. What is happening?" A pair of scrubber tools folded from the sides of my canopy and ran across the curved surface, wiping away the water. Any other time, the news that my ship had rain wipers would have been amusing to me. I'd never fought in rain before, as we didn't have it on Detritus. However, it was completely overshadowed by, you know, the buildings. "Peg!" I shouted over the comm as a hover car appeared some distance in front of me. "You seeing this?"
"Seeing it," she said on a wide channel. "Not quite believing it. We're in the middle of a warp of new objects entering the nowhere. Never seen one of these in person. Careful, everyone. I don't want to have to scrape any of you off the side of a building."
Scud. I felt a strange sensation. A stretching, or that's the best I could explain it.
"Delver attack," Chet guessed. "In the somewhere. That's what is bringing all this in here. A Delver has gone to your dimension, and as it strikes, it's warping the city into this place. You don't recognize these structures, do you?"
"Thankfully, no," I said. "This isn't happening on Detritus." But yeah, I guessed he was right. The stretching sensation was the nowhere opening, being punctured as the Delvers shoved things from my dimension in here.
Deep breath," Embot said.
"Okay, analysis says these structures appear to be superiority designs."
Why would they be attacking one of their own? Perhaps a planet that was in rebellion? The light next to Peg's name changed, indicating she'd moved to a private line.
"Damnedest thing here, Spin. Not one, but two explosive fragment collisions. And now this. Ha! Really feels like the nowhere is trying to get us, eh?"
"Yeah," I mumbled. My proximity sensor pinged, the display showing that Hesho and his wingmate had avoided the suddenly appearing buildings and were on my tail again.
"Ha ha. Don't think too much of it," Peg said. "It's random, kid. I don't want you getting any ideas that the broadsiders grow engolins or anything like that. We're not unlucky. We found you, after all."
She cut the line.
"She's wrong," Chet said. "This is about us. The path we're walking. It has them angry." "You focus on flying," Chet said. "I'm expanding my cytonic powers, and I think I can track the former champion and his wingmate, even in this mess. I'll give you warning if they try to ambush us again."
and I'll suppress my outbursts for now, Embot said. Spensa, this is serious. Fly well, please.
Will do, I said, veering carefully so I wouldn't overwhelm the grav caps. Chet had promised me he could take the G-forces, but I still wanted to be cautious. If I blacked out when buildings were appearing all around us.
My scans indicate these buildings are uninhabited, Embot said, and they look old and run down.
As I flew, I tried to pick out what I could with my burgeoning cytonic senses. I felt the Delvers, connected to one of their kind in the somewhere, and I overheard annoyance, but not anger. They didn't hear noise at the moment. They were performing. It's a test, I said. Winzik finally got smart and decided to try the Delvers out on an unpopulated location to see if they really were under control.
Perfect chance for them to throw a city at us, Chet said.
Fortunately, the Delver efforts didn't seem precise. Objects started appearing all through the battlefield, not merely in front of me. If they'd been able to control this exactly, they would have made something appear so close to me that I couldn't dodge.
The former champion is coming back around, Chet said. He's staying close to fool scanners, but I can echolocate him there. He should soon emerge from behind that office building to the left.
Thanks, I said. As I was getting the hang of flying in here, for the next bit, I was able to keep my attention on Hesho. He flew well, as I'd trained him, but his wingmate wasn't as skilled. They did manage to get vaguely on my tail, so I led the two of them around the side of an enormous building that had a large open space near the roof. Parking for ships, maybe? As we rounded the building, I cut my speed and ducked inside. Hesho and his wingmate followed. The confines of the hangar were tight, but a huge window filling the entire far wall provided good visibility. I regretted my decision, as both Hesho and his friend opened fire. There wasn't a lot of room to maneuver in here, and slowing bunched us up. Their shots took down my shields, so I hit my IMP, hoping it would reach them. And then I smashed my ship out through the back window as destructor fire chased me.
I think you only managed to catch one of them with that, Embot said. The one who isn't Lord Hesho.
Scud.
I swooped down along the building, then speared the bottom corner with my light lance and made an assisted turn, barely in time as destructor fire sprayed behind me. I took the next three turns fast, darting through an increasingly busy junkyard of a battlefield. Was that a cow? I kept flying through the cluttered urban debris, pushing to get ahead of Hesho, but he stuck on me. His wingmate didn't have to. They could cut out of the chase at times and then swoop back in as we came around another direction. As long as Hesho was putting heat on me, I had to stay on the defensive. I tried to loop around and pick off the wingmate, but Hesho unloaded a sequence of shots just ahead of where I had been planning to go, which forced me on a different direction. Without a shield, I had to be extra cautious. So in seconds, both of them were on me again. Eventually, one of those shots was going to land. I broke downward, flying among dropping chunks of rock and debris. Hesho wove behind me.
Warning, Spensa, Chet said. I am tracking the wingmate, though it's out of sight. I think Hesho has ordered the wingmate to fly around. They're trying to pin us.
Scud. He was correct. When I leveled out, I spotted the wingmate hovering there, ready to open fire, while Hesho still pressed me from behind. I dodged as best I could and felt another stab of pride. I hadn't taught Hesho this kind of advanced technique, but I liked to think that it was my foundation in combat teamwork that had led him to strategies like this. I wove in and out of falling chunks of rock and hit my overburn, intending to run straight through the shots from the wingmate and hope none hit me. At that moment, though, a spray of fire, seemingly out of nowhere, slammed into the wingmate, freezing the ship.
We have arrived, Spin, Shiver said over the comm. I should think that you'd know better how to stay with a group. You motiles, always wandering off in random directions.
Thanks, I said. I appreciate the assist. Other ships came in to nip at the two resonants, chasing them back away from the mess of appearing buildings. Those were largely centered on me. So while the Delvers weren't precise, they could evidently lob things in my general direction. I was glad Shiver and the others were mostly moving to the other side of the battlefield. As much as I'd have liked help against Hesho, I didn't want the others flying in these dangerous confines. Honestly, I was worried most about Hesho himself. As long as he stuck on me, he was risking death. I needed to stun him quickly, if I could. I gave chase, passing a couple of drifting ships locked up, but with their shields reignited to protect from collisions. A superiority tug was gliding in to pull them to safety, and nobody attacked it. Kind of like how you might leave an enemy medic alone on an old Earth battlefield. I found the civility of it encouraging. I pulled out of the lower debris field, then veered sharply as the air began to vibrate. A second later, a small fragment appeared just above me, a chunk of city stretching for hundreds of meters, marked with sidewalks and planters. Right, okay, I could handle this. I steered up over the edge of it and wiped the sweat from my hands. That maneuver had let Hesho get behind me again, unfortunately. He started firing and I barely dodged. It was time to see if I could exploit his muscle memory. I started a routine maneuvering sequence, one I'd drilled into him and the others as I'd trained them outside the Delver maze, a warm-up meant to teach good fundamentals. Hesho fell in behind me as I moved, and his disruptor shots trailed off. Yes, I thought. You know this routine. You flew it with me dozens of times. Why did he stop? Chet asked. I didn't respond, continuing the motion. Hesho inched forward, and I let him fall almost into my wingmate position. I'd been intending to break out of this maneuver unexpectedly and throw him off, maybe earning me a breather to reignite my shield. But this seemed to be triggering a memory in him. Together, we soared over the new fragment, no longer fighting, no longer worried about other ships, as we were getting increasingly distant from the others, who were staying away from the debris. I continued the motions. I could almost feel Hesho's longing, his thoughts stretching toward mine. Then my mind went cold. It was like I'd been doused by a bucket of ice water. I pulled my ship back to be even with his, then glanced toward his cockpit. It was tinted dark, which prevented me from making out any of his features. It wasn't dark enough, however, to obscure the two powerful white spots that were shining deep within the cockpit where Hesho's eyes would have been. The Delvers had taken him. Chapter 34. Hesho broke out of our two-person formation, then flared his boosters and barreled away from me.
Oh, scrud, Chet said.
Spencer, Embot said, what's wrong?
Let her fly, AI, Chet said as I fell into pace behind Hesho. Something is very wrong.
What? Embot asked.
The Delvers, I said. They took him. His eyes are glowing white. Chet cursed softly.
I'd hoped we would be safe from such direct intervention in a group. We must be too spread out on this battlefield.
I stayed on Hesho's tail as he looped around and flew through the center of the large debris field of hanging buildings. The remaining fighters on both sides had moved to the perimeter, as it had gone from dangerous to insane to fly here, with chunks spinning and colliding like an asteroid field. Two buildings smashed together ahead of us, spraying shards of glass like rain. And as I flew through it, they snapped against my hull and canopy, reminding me that I'd never found a chance to reignite my shield. Why did the Delver want to fly through this? In the past, they'd chased me. Now this one wanted me to chase it? Well, I was game. It wanted to see how good I was? Let it watch. I expertly trailed Hesho Delver. We darted down through the narrowing crack between a chunk of rock and a free-flying factory, then flew underneath the still-crumbling fragments. That took us through a stream of falling water that was spraying from a building above.
Was this the Delver actually flying? No. These maneuvers were familiar. Somehow it was leaning on Hesho's skills. Well, I was going to rise to its test. We soared between crashing pieces of rock, down alongside a falling roadway, through sprays of debris that clattered against my canopy. Everything else faded, and I absently muted other comm chatter. Nothing mattered but me and the chase. The Delver tried increasingly difficult moves to get me to trip up. Soon I was sweating, my attention tight like a narrow scanner band. Just me, that ship, and the immediate terrain. Hesho Delver miscalculated on a light lance pivot and slammed into a big chunk of stone, side first. His shield fuzzed, briefly visible as it absorbed the brunt of the impact. I grinned as I took the turn without a problem. Another hit like that and he'd be dead. My focus shattered like glass. I was suddenly aware not merely of my immediate surroundings, the cockpit, my sweaty hands on the controls, Chet breathing heavily in the co-pilot seat, the beeping proximity sensor, but the battlefield as a whole. Falling rock, crumbling buildings, hanging acclivity stone chunks. It wasn't just a series of obstacles anymore. It was a death trap. And this wasn't some contest to see how good I was. My stunned recovery took a moment, during which we came dangerously close to hitting a piece of a falling building. "Spensa," Embot said. "The rest of the fighting has paused. Most of the ships on both sides have been locked up, but there are 15 remaining functional fighters on the enemy side, while our side has 12, including Grem and Peg. But everyone has agreed to a cessation for now, as the battlefield is too dangerous. They want to make sure everyone locked up gets pulled out to safety before resuming." Ahead, Hesho wove between falling chunks. He'd slowed, taunting me to follow. They wanted to coax me into danger. They were willing to throw away Hesho's life for a chance to hurt me. I needed to end this chase. Now. I grabbed the control sphere and started firing, causing Hesho to slam on his overburn and blast away. His ship's faster speed shouldn't matter among all this debris. Unfortunately, that same debris blocked my shots. I ended up pelting a chunk of acclivity stone, broken off what appeared to be a storefront. As Hesho dodged, he took another collision from a falling piece of rock. His shield went down. Scud. Shooting at him was making him more reckless. I followed, uncertain what to do, my worry deepening. But Chet and Embot stayed quiet and gave me time to think. And as I did, memories returned to me out of the cloud that was my past. Flying with Hesho and the Kitson, and with Braid, Vapor, and Morimer. Days spent training. Memories I hadn't even realized I'd lost. "Embot," I said. "Open a line to his ship."
"Done,"
Embot said.
"Flight 15, I snapped, trying to channel Cobb like I'd done when training Hesho and the others. "Line up, now."
I backboosted, pulling my ship to a halt. Ahead, Hesho's vessel slowed. How much did the Delvers control and how much was him? They needed his flying skill. Hopefully that meant they couldn't dominate him entirely. He'd responded to my voice, his drill instructor. I searched through my clouded recollections of that day. Hadn't Hesho had a different name for our flight?
"Flowers of Night's Last Kiss," I said. "Time to call roll. Fall in line, Hesho."
Hesho's ship stopped and turned. I didn't wait. I sprayed him with destructor fire. I felt only a tad guilty, but my shots flew true, causing his ship to flash blue and lock up. Behind me, Chet released a loud, relieved breath.
"Nice flying," he said softly.
"A soothing calm," Embot said. "Like I've just been serviced with a nice fresh can of lubricant. I'll call it repose."
"We're not done yet," I said. Using maneuvering thrusters, I inched over to his ship, close enough that we nearly bumped one another amid the falling debris. His canopy flashed and went transparent, the tint fading. He sat in there, those eyes glowing white, facing toward me in his little seat, his teeth bared. I pressed my mind forward, ignoring the way the Delver behind him screamed at me. I saw deep inside it. And there I found fear.
Chet, take the controls, I said. Don't let us drift apart.
As you ask,
he said.
But why?
In response, I popped my cockpit, hoping my guess was correct.
Spencer, Embot said, this is very odd behavior.
I'll be right back, I said. Chet, if I slip and fall, try to grab me or something. I climbed out of the cockpit and stepped onto my ship's wing. From there, I felt a strange sense of disorientation. Buildings floating overhead, tumbling in the sky. Two crumpled fragments locked together from their collision, spinning slowly. A white glow to my right. The light burst, looking on us through debris-filled space. I was standing at the crossroads of infinity, without lifeline or safety rope. Chet used maneuvering thrusters to keep the wing steady as I inched over to Hesho's craft. Then, before I could think better of it, I jumped. I landed square on Hesho's smaller fighter. It was more than large enough to hold me up, even if the cockpit wasn't much bigger than a flight helmet. I leaned down, stared at him through the now clear canopy, and stoked the star inside me. The me-ness. I let it shine out cytonically, invisible to conventional sight. Hesho Delver cringed away, pure white eyes open and glowing bright enough that I couldn't make out his other features. Why are you so afraid of me? I said. What is it that I don't know yet that makes you act this way?
You must return to us, the us you separated, Noise.
It was a deliberate attempt to get me to think of something else, judging by what my listening was telling me.
Give them back.
Look, I said, can't we please talk about this? What you're doing to me and my people?
This corrupts, they sent me.
I understood the implication. They meant that talking to me, interacting, risked changing them. They tried to withdraw, but I latched on. With my growing cytonic senses, I grabbed hold of the Delver. It was like Braid had done to me, except I was far, far weaker. I held on only barely. Either I didn't have a talent for this, or I needed a ton more practice. Still, even that little attempt panicked the Delver. This brought the full brunt of their attention, fear, and hatred upon me. In that moment, others gathered, and they tried to destroy me in the only way they knew how. By trying to make me one of them. I was pulled into the nowhere entirely. I became formless. I had no body, merely a mind floating in not darkness, as it normally was, but an infinite whiteness. Everything around me was white because it was full, packed with the Delvers, like an ocean is filled with water. They saw me as a corrupted version of them now. Cytonics were like Delvers. In a way, I was a cousin to them. They saw me as a tempter, also, luring them toward their destruction with crass things like linearity and individuality. Their minds assaulted me and pushed me to see as they did, to see the peace, the harmony of shared existence. I clung to my individuality, but it was frayed, worn, like a battle standard that had been shot full of holes. In seconds, what scraps of memories I still had left of my friends and family had frayed further, and my life in the somewhere began to vanish entirely. They wanted to erase it because of pain? Yes, they knew pain from the past, but had escaped it. I latched onto this. It was a clue or a seed of one, yet it was terrifying how I responded to their offer. To the peace, the blending of self, the eternity without pain. There could be no pain without the passage of time. There could be no anger when everyone agreed absolutely on everything. I can't really explain why that was so entrancing. I can't even explain what it felt like. How do you describe such a thing? I was just a pilot, without the right words. I didn't want to succumb to them, but I also had difficulty fighting.
In a panic, I stretched out, searching for help, perhaps from my friends, whose names I was forgetting, whose faces blended into white. And then something. Support from someone distant, a friend? That comforting mind that was somehow my pin, the one that I was increasingly certain was my father. It bolstered me and brought with it images. The delightful scent of water dripping in the caverns back home. The calming purpose of tinkering on Embot's ship with Rig. My mother's exhausted smile after a long day of work upon seeing me. Grand-grand's steady voice speaking of the heroines of the past. Then another mind, from the other side, a mind that reminded me of things I loved. Exploring, flying, stories. Existing was pain, but it was also joy. With those memories bolstering me, I stoked myself. My star came alight. I wasn't nothing here. I was Spensa, and my soul was fire. It exploded with brightness, and I offered that sense of myself to them. I bludgeoned them with who I was and the emotions I felt. They pulled away at that offer of corruption, at the offer of dissension. They retreated, though our exchange had told us a great deal about one another. As the sensation faded, I found another offer, a truce. Within me, they found my